Welcome to episode 51 of the MCS Real Sports Podcast. It's been a while since we last posted our 50th episode, but we're coming at you with some real sports talk here in this episode 51. I am your host, as always, Matt Skura. We got my great co-host to my right, Caleb Koenig. Caleb, how are you doing this fine Thursday, April 8th?
I'm blessed. That's right.
Yeah, I'm ready to rock as well. And we have a very special guest here. This man's rocking from all the way in New York, repping the Knicks gear. Knicks are 500, big Pats fan. We got the man, myth, the legend, Mr. CJ James. CJ, how's it going?
How's it going, man? Matt, Caleb, appreciate you guys for having me on this episode, bro. Thank you.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a great episode of great discussion topics. For today's episode, we'll be breaking down the Sam Darnold trade, what this means for the Jets, what this means for the Carolina Panthers. We'll also be discussing the draft, kind of what big moves teams should make, any even draft rumors that could happen as well. And one of our biggest NFL free agent signings. I know free agency has passed for the NFL, so we'll kind of give our opinion on which signing was the best one. And last but not least, we'll be discussing all things NBA related, the standings, and probably one of the most ridiculous top 10 lists from the NBA players under 25 I have ever seen. But with that being said, let's get into our first topic of discussion, the Sam Darnold trade to the Carolina Panthers. Trade that happened, I believe it was 2 days ago. Sam Darnold finally out of the New York Jets. Panthers gave up a 6th-round pick this year, and a 2nd-round pick and a 4th-round pick in next year's draft. I'll first kick it off with our special guest and CJ. So, CJ, what do you make of this trade? How would you grade this team from the Jets' perspective and the Panthers' perspective?
I think for the Panthers, I'll start with the Panthers since they got the only player in the deal. I think it's a different start. Obviously, they lost Cam Newton 2 years ago, trying to look for that quarterback. Obviously, you know, they were looking for trying to get Deshaun Watson, but we saw how that played out and the situation that he has going on down in Houston. So I feel like this is an alternative plan. The draft, they could potentially go in the top. They were potentially going to go in the top 10 and possibly get a quarterback there. But I feel like Darnold still has a lot of potential. He's only 23 years old, even though he's been in the league for three years. You know, Joe Brady did a great job coaching Joe Burrow back in LSU when he was the offensive coordinator. So I think, you know, they see some similar traits in his ability to throw the ball down the field, be mobile, run outside the pocket. Adam McCaffrey back, being healthy, only playing 3 games last year, and also having that rapport with Robbie Anderson. I think that's a great fit for Carolina and for the Jets. Just got to hit the reset button. I mean, for teams – until you find the guy, just keep hitting the reset buttons. Until you find that franchise guy, that's what you have to do. And it looks like the Jets are going to try to get Zach Wilson with that number 2 pick. They have a multitude of picks this year, next year, so they can build around him as his contract is not expensive. So I think both teams did a great job in this trade. You know, the Jets, they got picks. That's what they wanted. They have 2 first-round picks this year. They have maybe two or three in the 2nd round this year as well. And then some other picks as well that they got from Seattle and things of that nature. So they can hit the reset button. Got a new head coach in Robert Saleh, offensive coordinator that a lot of people are talking about, Mike LaFleur, Matt LaFleur's brother, and how dynamic he could be coming from Green Bay. I mean, coming from San Francisco. So I think it's promising for both squads. And I think both are winners.
Make a great point. You made a lot of great points there, bro. I mean, I think the Jets made a good move by getting rid of him. They got a lot back to build around Wilson. I think Wilson's, to me, when we talk about Wilson, I think Wilson is a better version of Baker Mayfield. That's just my observation. Not saying that Baker Mayfield is a bad quarterback. But I just think this guy's a little bit better. He has a little bit better of an arm. New York, just period, you want to be there. Any receiver is going to want to be there. The deals are there. So they're going to attract that in free agency. They did good with getting rid of Darnold. You guys did make a good point with him being He's only 23. He's been 3 years in the league. Didn't really look at it like that. So he is really, 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 really young. Do I think he could be a franchise quarterback when I talk about Super Bowl quarterback? I don't think he has that in him. I don't know. I think with him having McCaffrey and Robbie Anderson, and they got my boy DJ Moore, you feel me? So I think the Panthers are looking nice. If he could prove himself, have a solid year, they could maybe even make the playoffs. That could be good for him. I think both teams won, and, you know, Carolina got him at a cheap price. I mean, not really at a cheap price, but I think it was at the perfect price.
Yeah, I have to agree with both of you guys as well. I feel like this is a win-win for both teams. I mean, you look at the Jets, before the draft even occurred, when they attended Zach Wilson's pro day, they said they liked a lot what they saw out of Zach Wilson. And when you heard that, you kind of got a message that the Jets, they were going to trade Sam Darnold sooner rather than later. And with that move, that just, in my opinion, signifies that they're most likely going to go with Zach Wilson at number two. Now, they could throw a toss-up and take Fields at number two, but I feel like all signs are pointing towards Zach Wilson. I mean, the kind of pro day that he had with the Jets being there, liking all the tools that he was able to display. I feel like Wilson to the Jets at number two is a no-brainer. And like CJ mentioned earlier, the Jets, they got a lot of picks. They could definitely retool, especially with the new head coach, Robert Saleh, who, in my opinion, is going to be a good head coach. He was great. He was great with San Francisco as their defensive coordinator, turned him into one of the best defenses in the NFL. So I expect great things out of Robert Saleh and the New York Jets. And if you also look at the Panther side of things, what this signifies to me is the Panthers will not draft a QB at number eight. I always said if the Panthers didn't trade for a quarterback, if they didn't trade for Deshaun Watson, if they never made the Sam Darnold move, they would have most likely taken a quarterback at number eight, or even try and trade up to try and get a quarterback. But with them trading for Sam Darnold, that sends a message to me that with their eighth pick, they're most likely going to focus on another position besides a quarterback. But you also got to look at, from the Panthers, they didn't have to give up a lot. I mean, when you hear trying to get a young quarterback, you think of, you got to be willing to give up a first round pick at least. And especially at Sam Darnold's age, at 23, you would think that, you know, you have to give up a first-round pick because of how young he is. But with the stuff that they were able to give up, only had to give up a sixth-round pick this year, only a second and a fourth next year. If you're the Panthers, you think of that as a win, because you look at, if you wanted to try and get Deshaun Watson right now, you would have had to give up multiple first-round picks. That's your future investment. But the kind of trade capital that you gave up for Darnold, you kind of look at it as a situation of, if this pans out, then this is a steal. Like, we didn't have to give up a first round pick for a guy who could be phenomenal. That's great. But then you could also look at it as a way of, if he doesn't pan out, so be it. We only gave up a sixth round pick this year and a second and a fourth next year. So I feel like, and I also look at it from this perspective, Sam Darnold has to play good for the Panthers, because a lot of people, including myself, are giving Sam Darnold a pass just because look at the head coaches that he's had in his 3 years. He had Todd Bowles in his last year. Now, a lot of people look at Todd Bowles and say, Matt, what are you talking about Todd Bowles? He was great in Tampa. Well, as a defensive coordinator, he's fantastic. But as a head coach with the Jets, he only had one good year where they won 10 games and they didn't even make the playoffs. And then on top of that, he had Adam Gase for 2 years, possibly one of the worst head coaches in the NFL. I mean, his time in Miami was a disaster, made only one playoff appearance, and that's it. And look at what Tannehill has done since he left Adam Gase. He's turned into a respectable quarterback, got paid big money to be good as well. And you kind of hope for Sam Darnold to turn into that same thing, where you look at Sam and just say, look, he had Adam Gase for 2 years. How was he supposed to progress? This is his time to prove that it wasn't all Sam Darnold's fault in New York. It was the front office and the head coach. Because I'll tell you one thing. If he continues to have bad – if he has a terrible performance in Carolina, people are going to look at Sam Darnold differently, as more of a bust that some people portray him as today. But if he turns out to be great, people are just going to look at it and say, oh, it's just another case of somebody leaving Adam Gase and becoming a better head coach. And before we move on to the NFL draft, I kind of want to throw in other people's discussions as well. I'll throw it out to Caleb with my mentioning of Sam Darnold. If Sam Darnold's play continues to regress in Carolina, would you think of the same mindset of we can now classify him as a bust, not as a problem because of Adam Gase?
Yeah. I think that would make a lot more sense. Even with me, I think that would make it a lot more sense. Even with me, I said that he's like, I don't think he's a Super Bowl guy. I don't think he's a guy that's going to be, you know, the head honcho. I think he's going to be a mediocre type of guy. But if he does have a great season and he shows that, you know, he could be a very, very good quarterback, that could change his stock as well. So, I mean, he kind of gets like a fresh start. So, yeah, I agree with you saying. I think he gets more of a fresh start in Carolina. You got Christian McCaffrey, top three running back. Got Robbie Anderson. He already had a thousand yard season with him before. DJ Moore is another solid receiver that's going to take attention. So, I mean, their offense is going to be solid. If they could get Pitts, like you said, if they get Pitts at 8, that would be solid as well, too. I mean, that'll only make their offense 10 times better. But I think he starts off with a fresh play at Carolina right now.
And then I'll direct that same question to you, CJ. With Sam Darnold going to Carolina, if he continues to regress, should we now classify him as a bust quarterback?
100%. I mean, because like you guys said, you look at in New York, usually when you bring in a young quarterback, the right thing to do is build around him, put the right coaches around him, put the right roster around him as he's still young. Unless he's even Mahomes, like Mahomes has a great situation around him. It's not like he's completely carrying the entire Kansas City Chiefs franchise. They were in the playoffs the year before he got the start. They had two Pro Bowlers on offense already. They have a Hall of Fame head coach already. So that's what you have to do when you have a young quarterback. A lot of teams have failed to do that. The Jets are looking like they're trying to do that with Zach Wilson. Unfortunately, Sam Darnold didn't get that opportunity when he was there, when he was originally drafted as a Jet. So now like Caleb said, he's getting that, it's kind of like he's a rookie again, where he's getting put in that situation now where he has a solid roster around him. A lot of people have a lot of promise with Matt Rhule going 5-11. And there were a lot of games where they could potentially win it. They were up by like 24 against Tampa Bay a couple times. In the regular season, they had some leads where that quarterback play just wasn't good enough for them to get the W. So they're hoping that Darnold is that guy for the foreseeable future. In terms of stat projection, I mean, maybe I'm looking at 25 touchdowns around there. Maybe, you know, 10. You know, we talked about this as well in the past two episodes. I'm on a hard count with Matt on 25 touchdowns, maybe 10 to 12 picks, you know, and hopefully McCaffrey's healthy. You know, he's taking the carrying most of that offense, and you can use some play action, give the ball to Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore underneath, and you get the yak. And if they're able to get Pitts, I mean, that just opens up that offense even more. So it's a lot of pressure, even though I feel like both teams got a great deal, it's still a lot of pressure on both of those teams to produce now and see who got the better end of the deal at the end of the day. We'll see in coming up. Especially in the next year or two.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll definitely see which team won the trade. I feel like you mentioned, CJ, in like the next year or two, we'll kind of see like who really won, you know, this trade between the Jets and the Panthers. With that being said, let's move on to the NFL draft. There has been a lot of moves made before the draft. Like many of you guys have seen all over the NFL world, the 49ers made possibly one of the biggest trades, moving up to the third overall pick, which means the Dolphins move from 3 to 12. But then another shocking trade that happened was the Philadelphia Eagles moving from number 6 in the draft all the way down to number 12 with Miami. So now as we look at it, the Niners have the third pick, the Dolphins have the 6th pick, and the Eagles have the 12th pick. But before we get into those picks, let's discuss, and this has been talked about throughout the NFL world as well, what will the Falcons do with the number 4th pick? And I'll start off with this first question towards Caleb. With the 4th pick, do you think the Falcons will take a quarterback Or do you think they'll draft somebody else of their other needs, whether that be an offensive player or a defensive player?
That's a good question, because I think this is one of the deepest drafts with quarterbacks, like, in a minute. Like, you got maybe 4 or 5 quarterbacks that could be in, drafted in the top 10. So, I mean, we all look at Matt Ryan. We know, like, bro's time is going to come to an end. He's got maybe 2-3 more years, maybe 2 years. Who knows? But their offensive weapons there are ridiculous. You got Julio. You got Calvin. We all seen this year that they were still solid on offense with those two guys. I had them on fantasy, so I know damn well those two guys are going to produce. So I think at number 4 for the Falcons, it's intriguing to go with a guy like Kyle Pitts, because then it kind of makes them look similar or even match up with the team like the Chiefs, to me, in my perspective. You know, I mean, you're going to have to play man coverage when they're throwing the ball. There's no way you're going to be able to zone up. And they just get a solid running back. They get a not even a solid running back, just build a good running game, and their offense will be solid. So I think it's intriguing to get another position. But I think right now it's great if you could just go get Justin Fields. You feel me? If he falls to 4, he's from Georgia. Let him learn from Matt Ryan. He'll come up at the same time with Calvin Ridley, and then you could just move on from Julio and Matt Ryan. You could trade him, release him, go build around him. But I think it's intriguing to go to another position, but I think they should go with a quarterback.
And then I'll ask you that same question, CJ. With the Falcons at number 4, do you think they should go with the quarterback at number 4, or should they just go with another position of need and kind of, in a way, trust that Matt Ryan, with his going entering, I believe, his age 36 season, he can still produce at a high level?
Very tricky. It's very tricky because you could go with another offensive player because, again, you've seen Matt Ryan when he has great weapons around him, a solid run game, a solid scheme. That's when he's at his best. When he's throwing the ball 40, 45 times and the Atlanta Falcons are asking him to go win the game, the outcome isn't always great for the Falcons. So you could definitely go offensive weapon there. I would say go QB. I mean, if Fields is there, if San Fran doesn't take Fields, I think it's very possible that they could go the QB route, take Fields, have him sit behind Matt Ryan for a couple of years. Arthur Smith just became the head coach, so he has at least a 3-year, even though these contracts are 5-year deals, but they're really 3-year deals, because if you're terrible for 3 years, they're not going to keep you for the remaining 2. So he has about a 3-year window to try to make it work and solidify himself as the Falcons head coach for the future. If they could get a young guy in there, have him sit behind Matt Ryan, learn the system. And, you know, obviously if Julio Jones sees the writing on the wall that they want to rebuild, you could flip Julio for more picks and build around that young quarterback you just drafted in the next year's draft. So I think they should do something like that. That'd be very smart. Matt Ryan, you could also, if Matt Ryan still wants to play later into his, you know, he's 36 now, if he wants to play till he's 40, 3 more years left, you could flip him as well. Maybe get a second, maybe get some more picks as well. Continue to build that roster the right way. Arthur Smith is a run heavy type guy. I think they could use a running back soon. I don't know, maybe not in the draft in the first round, but definitely maybe in the later rounds. We've seen a multitude of running backs, you know, flourish, come out in the later rounds in the draft. So they could do something like that. I think they should go QB. That should be the smart route. And then I think Falcon fans have a little fatigue, Matt Ryan fatigue. I mean, obviously that Super Bowl is always going to be it's always going to hurt them. It's always something everybody's going to talk about just because of how the game went. And I feel like they just want to see something fresh, something new. And I think bringing a young guy in there, okay, this is what we got. We got Matt Ryan now, but, you know, he sits for a year, learns the game, learns the system. And then once Matt Ryan moves on, we can flip him. We can flip Julio for some assets for the young guy. I think it could be special for them because, again, that division is really up in the air. We just talked about Carolina. They just got a new quarterback. The Saints, I mean, you don't know what their quarterback situation is. Is it Winston? Is it Hill? Is it somebody that they may draft in the later rounds in the draft this year. And then it's just in Tampa Bay. It's just Tampa Bay. It's crazy. Tampa Bay used to be at the bottom. Now it's completely flipped. But, yeah, Tampa Bay has no questions, and all the other teams underneath them have all the most questions. So if they could figure it out sooner than the other two teams, they could put themselves in a good predicament to have some success pretty quickly.
Yeah, especially like just to build on what you said with that division, the NFC South, there's a king right now. We know who that is. Right. And that's Brady, but it's coming to an end, and we must accept that. So with that being said, like this division is going to be one of the divisions where, you know, it's a restart, like a total restart. Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, they ran the division for years, even Cam Newton. So now we're about to get a lot of new faces around. And I think, you know, it's only right for Atlanta to start with a quarterback. I think Justin Fields only makes it sweeter. He's from there. You know, that's when you get a hometown guy going to his hometown, that's always going to bring, you know, some type of motivation with that. But yeah, I think just to say, like, this division is about to get cracking. We're about to see some new faces.
Sure.
Yeah, we definitely are. And I was kind of back and forth on this. So I was thinking maybe the Falcons might go defense and keep it Matt Ryan. But with the points that you guys were saying, I might have to agree with it. I mean, you have to look at it from a future standpoint. And you also have to look at it. The Falcons also have to look at themselves in the mirror. Can the Falcons compete with Tampa in the division? The answer is a no.
Right now, they can, though.
No. Tampa's pretty much bringing back that same team that won the Super Bowl. It's going to be very hard. I'm saying if they can win the division, can they beat Tampa twice this season and have a better record than Tampa?
But hear me out. I agree with you guys. I don't think they could beat them twice. But there's seven seeds in the playoffs now. So I do, just because they can't beat them twice, I do think that they can get in there. I do think they could get in the playoffs. And if they get in the playoffs and they see them, it's one game. And I do think that Atlanta has the capability of beating them, especially when you see a team three times in 1 year. Feel me? Especially when you see a team three times. There's no doubt in my mind that their offense can keep up with Tampa. It's just their defense that is not that good.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they had they were up 24-7 against Tampa Bay last year, and then Tampa Bay came back and won the game, which was that was after the Kansas City game too, when they after the bye week and they were down. It's like, here we go again, and then Tampa Bay came back and they got the W. That kind of catapulted them into having a crazy run leading them to the Super Bowl. So Atlanta State offensively, they're good. It's just, Can you trust Matt Ryan, man? That's the question. Can you trust him in these crucial games? They haven't been in the playoffs since they went to the Super Bowl, if I'm not mistaken.
But no, the year after.
I have a question for you guys.
The year after, so it's been a couple seasons. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you guys. Can we blame that on Matt Ryan, or are we blaming it on the coaching down in Atlanta?
I say it's a mix of both. I feel like if you're Matt Ryan, you won the MVP. You have to have a say as a quarterback. You have to have the feel for the game. Like, you sometimes have to look at your coach and say, "Coach, why are we running a pass play on a first down? Just run the clock. Run it for two plays and pass on third down." Like when the Falcons had that big pass play when Julio made that phenomenal catch, they should have just went into, "All right, chew the clock. Just hand it off to Freeman. Let the Patriots chew their timeouts, chew the clock. There's no need to pass." Cause I believe like the next pass play, it was a holding play and it took them out of field goal range. Like, it's a mix of both. It's coaching. I mean, Dan Quinn, Kyle Shanahan, they had the bad coaching calls. Some situations, why are you even passing it? Just run the ball, chew the clock out. But then you also got to look at Matt Ryan and say, "Look, Matt, you've been in the league long enough. You were the MVP of that season. You have to be able to feel the game and feel the mindset of, hey, you know what? Maybe we don't have to sling it all the time. Maybe we could hand the ball off to Freeman, just chew the clock. And if we go in the mindset of chew the clock and the Patriots still manage to score, then so be it. The Patriots were just a good team." It didn't help when the Falcons shot themselves in the foot with the strip fumble by Hightower, and then some bad managing of the clock. So it's a mix of both, but most of it should go to the coaching staff. If we had to pick a certain thing, the coaching staff is one, because the coaching staff has to set the players up for success. You can only rely on the players for so long until it eventually boils down to the coach. And you got to look at the coach and say, coach, what were you thinking?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's just, to me, like, if you're that dog, man, if you, like, if you're that guy, like, you know, and you hear a play call in your helmet, and you're like, nah, we can't go with that. Let's go with something that's going to guarantee us the win. We've seen a lot of quarterbacks do that. We've seen Russell Wilson talk about that. We saw Aaron Rodgers talk about that, changing the play pre-snap because they feel like they see something better on the field. You didn't really hear a lot about that when it comes to Matt Ryan. So, yeah, I agree. Coaching, definitely, for sure. I mean, they should have just continued to run the ball, run the clock out, because it should be no reason as possible. You're up that much, and New England has enough time to come back and tie it up, go into OT and do that. So it was a combination of both. But boy, they got one regime. They got Quinn and Shanahan out of there. So now we're going to see, you know, what Matt Ryan is now. And if he's not that guy, they could, like we talked about, they could take Fields and they could flip him and try to get some assets and start this thing all over again.
Yeah, right. Definitely. And I understand. I just to build on top of Atlanta, they've been fucking up comebacks for a long time. Not even in the Super Bowl. That's one time. Even this year, I remember that they were beating the Cowboys by hella. Then the fucking onside kick happened.
I know how
you just talked about the Tampa. Like, what the fuck, bro? It's been happening for a long time.
Yeah, bro.
You feel me?
It's been happening for a long time. And they look at now. I'm telling you, they got some Matt Ryan fatigue, man. That's what I'm saying. So yeah. I feel like that move to go young could be the way.
And I think so too. But I also think so. What I also think is they're a team that can win right now. Like, let's say if they do go with the offensive line piece to, you know, give Matt Ryan protection, or let's say they go out and get a defensive end so they could get some more, you know, pressure on the quarterback. I think that they could still put themselves in the playoffs. No, I don't think that. I don't think that they can win the Super Bowl, but I do think they could be a team that competes. You feel me? With Matt Ryan, if they wanted to take that route. But I think the younger route, Justin Fields, that's my guy. That's who I'm pushing for. Justin Fields, the ATL, you feel me? Boom. And he could develop under Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan is a solid-ass quarterback, for sure.
Yeah, he definitely can be. And I feel like if you draft Justin Fields at number four, how long can you wait with Justin Fields behind? Because if we're being honest, Justin Fields, if he gets drafted high enough, he could be a day one starter right away. It's just, how long are you going to wait with Justin Fields? Could you wait? Could you be able to have him sit on the bench for 2 to 3 years before starting? Or is this a situation of have him sit this season, look for trades with Matt Ryan, see what you can get, and then kind of move on and usher in Justin Fields? Or if you're Arthur Smith, like CJ mentioned, coaching contracts are pretty much 3 years. They say it's five, but you got 3 years. Are you Arthur Smith? Do you kind of look at it as and say, I got Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. I got to try to win in these 3 years or else I'm fired. Does he look at it from a perspective of, we might have to get somebody that wins now, because if I don't, I'm going to be gone in 3 years? Or does this front office trust me enough where, all right, you know what? We'll let you play out the full 5 years. Go get your replacement at number four. You groom up Fields and you turn him into something special. So we'll see what Atlanta does at number four, but that is going to be one of the most intriguing draft picks I can't wait to see in the next 3 weeks. Let's move on to some other draft picks. Let's talk about the 49ers at number three. I'll start off first by saying I feel like the 49ers at number three is where we're going to really see kind of the tone of the draft. Because in my opinion, I think we could all pretty much agree the first two picks are pretty much set. Trevor Lawrence to Jacksonville at one, Zach Wilson at two to the New York Jets. Number three of the 49ers, that's a big toss-up. I know we mentioned Justin Fields to Atlanta if he falls to number four, but the thing was if. Because I'll tell you one thing, if the 49ers draft Justin Fields at number three, I expect to see Jimmy Garoppolo out of San Francisco sooner rather than later. And you also have to look at it from the perspective of San Francisco, they're guaranteeing getting a quarterback. If they draft something else besides a quarterback, it will probably be the most shocking thing of the NFL draft. So with that being said, I kind of want to hear what you guys have to say. I'll start off with our special guest in CJ. Who do you think the 49ers will take at number three? Will it be Justin Fields? Will it be Mac Jones? Or will it be the biggest wild card of all time in Trey Lance?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I haven't even thought about Lance. I think people have said he was so high originally. It was Lawrence, Fields, Lance. And then that's how it was for months in terms of the quarterback rankings. And then Zach Wilson came on the scene. Then Mac Jones had a special season, and they kind of usurped Fields and Lance a little bit. So I think as San Fran, I'm just looking at how the quarterbacks that Kyle Shanahan has been around since he's been coaching. You got Matt Ryan, we just talked about, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, predominantly pocket passers, slice you down the field. They're still going to run the ball, run heavy, stretch plays, set up the play action. West Coast, they're going to run that West Coast offense with some modified schemes in terms of route running and things like that. I think Mac Jones will probably be the best fit just from that play style standpoint. They could go with a special athlete that could do similar things in terms of playing well in the pocket, and that could be Justin Fields, no doubt about it. Trey Lance, we just haven't seen enough. I mean, we saw that one year in 2019. It was crazy, and then North Dakota State only played one game last year, and they're invitational, and he didn't play that great. So we don't know what he's improved on. We don't know what he's worked on. I think they go Mac Jones. I think they'll go with Mac Jones. He came on the scene. He was a third string quarterback in Alabama behind Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa. And then he just came out of nowhere, similar to Joe Burrow, really. You look at Joe Burrow was sitting behind JT Barrett and Dwayne Haskins for the majority of his college career. And then once he got his true opportunity, he didn't let it go. So and he came on the scene and played great. I think they're probably going to go with him at three. Fields, I don't know. I'm hearing a lot of negative stuff about Fields. I don't know why, but it's crazy. But I think if he drops, it could be a blessing in disguise. Again, he could go to a good team with a good roster, good coaching, and he could develop the right way and have a better career than some of those other guys who are kind of thrown into the fire on some bad teams because they have those top picks. So I think San Fran, they're gonna go with Mac, and we'll see. I think they're in a great position again because they were just in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. It's not like they need him to do everything right away. And if Garoppolo wants to stay for one more year, he could sit behind Garoppolo and learn, or they could flip Garoppolo and get some assets and keep the thing pushing with Mac.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, it's a good question, but I think that's where the draft starts. You know, when we go to San Francisco, that's where the draft starts at number three. And Mac Jones, don't get me wrong. I love Mac Jones. I think he's a great pocket passer. All five quarterbacks in the draft, they're all solid and they all have like their own specialties. You feel me? So I want to let that be known. But for some reason, I just feel like the Niners are going to go end up with Fields. Like I said, we were just talking about Fields going to Atlanta. And I think if Fields could go to Atlanta, that'd be perfect. If Fields even falls to four, I think Atlanta has to take it. Like, they got to do it. But I feel like if Fields ends up in San Francisco, that'll just make their offense so much more dynamic. You got somebody who could get inside and out of the pocket with George Kittle because, you know, George Kittle, I feel like is going to be their number one guy for a long time. I think if they do get like a Jamar Chase at number three, that would shock a lot of people. But hey, I think that would make them a lot more dynamic with Kittle and Chase, or Kittle and Devontae Smith, although it's probably not gonna happen. I think they'll end up with Fields, though, because it'll just make them more dynamic. I think that's the right move for them. But, you know, like you said, Shanahan is used to pocket passers, and Mac Jones fits his scheme. And I think he has a good deep ball, but I think he's just too like, you could get – you if you're going to go with Mac Jones, you kind of might as well kind of stay with Jimmy. Feel me? And just get some more pieces around Jimmy. But I think they need to go with Fields. That's my vote.
Yeah, I have to agree as well. And Caleb, I love the point that you made of Mac Jones is eerily similar to Garoppolo. He would be. Like he would literally be a replication of Jimmy Garoppolo. Basically, do what Shanahan says, run the ball, just be kind of the same oriented team. But if they want to be dynamic and kind of like one up the competition, if they do want to get Fields at number three, they definitely could. But I also, Caleb, I love how you threw in the mention of either a Jamar Chase or a Devontae Smith. I feel like even if they get those, it would probably be very, very interesting, because what that would mean to me is they trust Garoppolo as their guy. And you look at the weapons that they already have. They have Kittle, they got Ayuk, they got Deebo Samuel. Those aren't too bad as like a 1-2-3. But if you get
young.
And they're young as well. But if you could add a guy like a Jamar Chase to that team, I think it would be great. But that would send a message to me that the 49ers really believe in Jimmy Garoppolo. If they draft Chase at three, that's what that would be. Now, I believe they're going to get a quarterback. I believe it's going to be Mac Jones or Justin Fields. Most preferably, if I were the 49ers, I would go with Justin Fields. Just like you mentioned, Caleb, it's dynamic. He could be mobile. It's kind of like the new wave. It seems like the new wave of the NFL is you got to be a mobile quarterback. You got to be – I mean, unless if you're Brady who can dissect the offense left and right, that's pretty much the only way how you cannot be a mobile passer. But you pretty much got to be able to run around the pocket. And Fields is that guy. And in my opinion, if they were to get Fields, it could help the 49ers be dominant in this NFC West division for a long time, because – the NFC West is one of the strongest divisions in the NFL. I mean, you look from the quarterbacks in that division. You got Stafford with the Rams. You got Kyler Murray with the Cardinals, Russ in Seattle. The 49ers, they're in a trend of they might have the fourth best quarterback in that division with Garoppolo, and they made some Super Bowl 2 years ago. If you could add Justin Fields to that, who has the same dynamic, the same mobility, they have a chance to where, one, they could be dominant with that defense, and two, they could be a powerhouse in that division, not just for the next 3 years, for the next 5 to 10 years, because Justin Fields is that good of a quarterback. So
it'll be interesting. And I don't mean to interrupt you, but one thing I want to say about Justin Fields and the Niners is if they pick him, and what I mean by only more dynamic is their run game is what got them to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. It was their run game and defense and short passes. That's it. Now you got the run game and your quarterback can run too with the solid line.
That's what the Ravens want to try to be.
Exactly. And I mean, yeah. They got to go get Fields. That's the guy.
Makes a lot of sense.
And don't get me wrong, CJ, I like your point in Mac Jones. He fits in the same mold what Kyle Shanahan wants. But like Caleb mentioned, that's almost in a way like a second version of Jimmy Garoppolo. Just kind of do what the coaches say. Don't turn the ball over. Don't be a liability. Even if we only have to throw 8 passes, you know, just don't turn the ball over. And that's that. But in the NFL, you got to be able to change. You got to be able to flip the mold sometimes. And that's kind of what costed the Niners a Super Bowl. I mean, they were up by 10. They were running the ball well. Didn't really make a lot of turnovers. But when it came to the crunch time, Garoppolo barely missed on the throw with Sanders. And that's what makes or breaks it for you. And, you know, Fields could be that guy to where – he could help the 49ers get over that hump, because he's that dynamic of a player. So we'll see what the 49ers do with the number 3 overall pick. Another pick that I am very intrigued to see is, and this is kind of a double The Dolphins at number 6 and the Eagles at number 12. I'll throw it out with Caleb first. So Caleb, you got the Dolphins with the 6th overall pick. They originally went from 3 to 12 and then traded up from 12 to 6. With this move the Dolphins have with the 6th overall pick, who do you believe the Miami Dolphins will draft with that 6th overall pick? Will they go with the defensive guy like a Micah Parsons, or will they try to get offensive weapon help for Tua like a Devontae Smith or a Jamar Chase?
I definitely think they go with the offensive weapon help. Well, we're really going to see where the draft starts, like we've been talking about the whole time. The draft might start at the 5th pick. You feel me? Those 4 might be all quarterbacks, and it might really start at the 5th pick. Depending on what specialty guy is available, Pitts, Chase, Devontae Smith, I think those are the guys, one of the guys they pick. I think if Chase is available, they pick him. I think if Pitts is available and Chase isn't available, they pick him. But I think if Chase is available, that's their guy. And they need offense. They need the help with Tua. I mean, Devontae Parker is good. Their receiving core is solid, but I think if they get another receiver, they'll be ready. I mean, the Dolphins are going to be a team in the near future that a lot of people have to look out for. Like, believe it or not, they're going to be ready.
And then I'll direct that same question to you, CJ. With the Dolphins at now number 6, does that mean they go with the offensive weapon to help Tua, or do they maybe surprise some people, go with a defensive kind of guy?
Yeah, I think they go offense. I agree with Caleb. Got to get a guy in on that offensive side to match up with Tua. They don't really have great weapons. Devontae Parker, he's good, but he's inconsistent. So Gesicki's really good as a tight end. Then you could always have a great tight end. That'd probably be the best. That's the best. That's a quarterback's best friend, is having a really good tight end. So they have that set. Obviously, no running backs is going to go in the top 25. So they don't have to worry about that. So getting a guy like Chase or Smith would be perfect. The guy that could just be a problem on that outside. Make reliable plays, get a lot of touchdowns. Both of those guys put up a lot of touchdowns in their last year in college. So I think Chase would be a great fit. Smith could be also, he has a relationship with Tua already in that Alabama connection. So that could be very possible. They could go there. But I don't see any other, I mean, you could say Pitts. If Pitts is not taken, you could go the dual tight end route. You know, people are talking about him being a special tight end and special receiver. He could put him out on the Y, put him out in the slot. He could do some things and create mismatches on linebackers and safeties. So that's very possible. But I think if any either Pitts, Smith, or Chase, you got to go with one of those 3 guys at 6 for Miami. You got to get Tua some help. You can't say Tua is not the guy when you haven't put the right pieces around him so for anybody to see if he's the guy. You can't ask a young quarterback to carry the franchise year 1. It's just not realistic. So you gotta put the right roster around him, then see what you have. Because even if it doesn't work out, then at least you still have the roster, and then you could go get another QB. So they gotta get that wide receiver. They gotta get that wide receiver down. They have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I agree with you guys as well. They have to go with the offensive player to help Tua. You can't just say, oh, Tua isn't our guy. Well, when his only solid receiver is Devontae Parker and an up-and-coming tight end and Mike Gesicki, what is he supposed to do? Like, if only a veteran quarterback could find success with that, that's why Ryan Fitzpatrick had those successful moments when he filled in, because he's a veteran. He's been around for 15, 16 years. He knows how a playbook works. So I do believe with the 6th pick, though, I feel like they're most likely going to go with the receiver, either a Jamar Chase or a Devontae Smith. But CJ, I do like how you mentioned Kyle Pitts, because if they do want to go in that 2 tight end set, like you mentioned earlier, they definitely can do that. And I also love how you mentioned Kyle Pitts. You could put anywhere. I mean, we saw how dominant he was in Florida. Like, he was Kyle Trask's main guy. Like, he was built like a tight end. You put him in the tight end slot, but then sometimes you would see him line up on the side and it's like, oh my God, this is almost like a DK Metcalf kind of player. Super big, tall, and strong, and could run fast. And I feel like if I'm the Dolphins, it has to be an offensive weapon. Now, they could toss it up and maybe draft a lineman. I mean, it's a toss-up if you want to try to protect Tua. You could make a case for that as well. But I feel like in my humble opinion, they're most likely going to draft an offensive weapon to try and prove that Tua really is a guy. Because if Tua is a guy, then the Miami Dolphins could very well be a playoff contender this year if he turns into that guy. But, I mean, worst case scenario, if Tua doesn't turn out to be the guy, then you could just go out and trade for a veteran quarterback. Maybe go out and bring in Teddy Bridgewater, maybe sign a QB in the offseason and kind of build off that aspect. But to help Tua right now, they have to draft an offensive weapon at the sixth pick. And another pick that I want to discuss that I feel like is very interesting is a 12th overall pick. I was one of those people that was shocked at first when the Eagles traded down from 6 to number 12. I looked at it as a, what are the Eagles doing? They just blew an opportunity to get Ja'Marr Chase in a Philadelphia Eagles uniform to help give Jalen Hurts some weapons. But now that they're at number 12, I feel like it could be an interesting approach to see what they will do at number 12. I will first start off with my co-host and Caleb. Caleb, you follow the Eagles a lot. Knowing that they have the 12th overall pick, if you're Howie Roseman, the GM of the Philadelphia Eagles, who do you draft at number 12?
I think it was tough to start off with. You know, they had the sixth pick. That means, in my case, they were going to get a playmaker, a top 1-2 playmaker, like Ja'Marr Chase, Kyle Pitts type guy. I think they still need a playmaker. I think that's the right way for us to go. But we can go on the defensive side of the ball as well. And I don't think that's a big deal, because I still think on the defensive side of the ball, if that's something the Eagles do want to do, that they'll still get somebody solid late in the draft around 10-12. So I understand that. Now, I get back to my point. There's four offensive players in the top 10 that I think that are receivers and tight ends that I think, you know, people are trying to get. That's Pitts, Chase, Smith, and Waddle, right? So I think with the Eagles trading down to 12, they could at least get one of those guys, one of them. I don't know who. Maybe Waddle? I don't know. Maybe Smith. If we could still end up with Smith at 12, we won. Yeah, that's a steal. But if we end up with Waddle, I'm okay with that too. I think that's like realistic, if we're being honest. But I think they still got to shoot for one of those guys. But I think maybe the picture might be a little bit more clear. They might be wanting to build the defense and, you know, let the offense find themselves. So I don't know what they're doing, but I don't know. It's I don't know. The GM, what's his name? Howie Roseman?
Yeah.
Hey, man, this is a message from me to you, bro. Just make sure you pick really well, because I was really mad at first. I was really fucking mad. But now it's just making more sense. You feel me? Just make sure you hit on these picks, though.
And then I'll ask that same question to you, CJ. Now the Eagles go from number 6 to number 12. What kind of approach do you believe the Philadelphia Eagles will take at that number 12 spot? Will it be, like Caleb mentioned, a possibly a defensive-oriented kind of route, or will they try to help Jalen Hurts, knowing that Jalen Hurts is their QB, maybe draft a lineman, maybe get him a weapon, like Caleb mentioned, like a Jalen Waddle, or is it just this is just the Eagles being the Eagles, they don't know how to draft, they're going to find a way to mess it up?
Gotta go Waddle there, man. If he's available, I think originally before the free agency, it was likely he could have possibly gone to the Giants. But the Giants getting Galladay, that's out the picture now. They don't need a wide receiver now in the top 10. So, Cowboys, they don't need a wide receiver in the top 10. They already have, you know, three guys that they have. So that leaves Waddle right there at 12 for Philadelphia, and I think that's the right choice. Got to get some type of offensive talent around Jalen Hurts. If he's your guy, if that's the guy you're going to build around, you get just traded Carson Wentz to Indianapolis. So if you want him to be the guy, if you want to contend in that NFC East division, got to get some weapons. Fulgham showed some promise earlier in the season, kind of digressed a little bit towards the end. Could possibly be a two Jalen Reagor had some, made some splashes here and there, could potentially be that deep threat to change the game here and there. But he was inconsistent. He was inconsistent. He had hurt. Yeah, he wasn't healthy. So Waddle is coming off an injury as well with the ankle, but he did show some toughness coming back, playing in the national championship game. Didn't play a lot, obviously, because he missed so much time. But, you know, they just chose to show he's a dog. And before he went down, people were looking at him as the number one receiver over Smith. So that could be a steal within itself. Yeah. If they're able to snag him and get him there, trade him back to 12. What it does is create more assets, get some more picks in Philadelphia, because that's what they need. Got to continue to fill out the rest of that roster. So I think it was smart, but it's just like Caleb said, not like a lot of Philly fans are thinking right now, you know, do they trust Roseman with that power to make sure they get the right guys in there? He had some hits, and he had some misses. I'm pretty sure they're hoping that this draft is definitely a hit. And I think getting a guy like Waddle could definitely help Jalen going forward.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you guys. I feel like at the 12th pick, they have to go with somebody on offense. You move on from Carson Wentz, that sends a message that Jalen Hurts is your guy. And you need to help him out with the nice, solid offensive weapon. And Jalen Waddle is definitely going to be that guy, especially at number 12. Now, if somehow, some way, Kyle Pitts manages to fall all the way to 12, the Eagles need to snag him up ASAP. I don't care that they have Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert as their tight ends. You get the best available guy in Kyle Pitts to help out the offense. But I also want to throw out there, Howie Roseman, he has to hit this pick. Because I mentioned to Caleb before we started this episode, I said to Caleb, if Howie Roseman doesn't build the Eagles into a playoff team in the next 2 years, he's fired. He'll be fired if the Eagles don't make the playoffs in 2 years, because when you trade down from 6 to 12, like you mentioned, CJ, you get draft capital, you get assets that help build your team. This is the 2-year window for the Eagles. If Howie Roseman messes up in these 2 years, he's most likely going to be fired. And so far for Howie Roseman, he's whiffed on some receivers. He could have had DK Metcalf. Instead, he drafted JJ Arcega-Whiteside, and that has been an interesting move. He could have had Justin Jefferson last year, and instead he drafted Jalen Reagor. Now, Jalen Reagor, like CJ mentioned, he's had some bright spots, but he's been hurt. And seeing what Justin Jefferson put up in Minnesota, if he could have had that with the Eagles, they probably couldn't have made the playoffs, because the NFC East was so bad, they could have possibly made it in the playoffs. But basically, to make it short and sweet, they have to get an offensive weapon to help Jalen Hurts succeed. Because if they don't, then the Eagles could be in a whole world of hurt. And the NFC.
Matter of fact, I don't mean to interrupt you, but matter of fact, I think if the Eagles take Justin Jefferson last year over Reagor, I think they don't even trade out of the sixth spot this year. I think they even try to trade up to get a quarterback that's gonna be like the guy for this guy. You feel me? That's just my, you know, that's just what I thought. But go ahead.
That definitely would have been an interesting point. And then on top of that, you basically, what I'm trying to say is the Eagles, they've whiffed on some receivers the last 2 years. They drafted Arcega-Whiteside instead of Metcalf, and they drafted Reagor instead of Jefferson. They have to hit this pick right, because if they somehow mess up this 12th overall pick, this team is not going to do well, because you look at the other teams in the NFC East, it's wide open. You look at the Cowboys. We don't know what the Cowboys are. We don't know if Dak Prescott is going to be the same player he was before he got hurt. We got the Washington football team. They just made the playoffs, but they've gone through some changes. You know, we don't know if Washington can keep it up. We got the Giants. They have Saquon coming back. They just got Galladay in the offseason. It's a toss up in the air. Then you got the Philadelphia Eagles. They're kind of one of those teams to where they could be a contender or they could be rock bottom. We just have to see what the Eagles will do with that 12th overall pick. And the last thing I want to discuss before we get into our biggest free agent move, CJ, you are a big Patriots fan. Patriots got the 15th pick. Who do you think your Patriots are going to draft with that 15th overall pick?
Man, I have no clue. I have no clue, because I think all the receivers will be gone by then, the good ones. I think the quarterbacks probably be gone. Maybe with the exception of maybe Trey Lance. Maybe Trey Lance could be there at 15. It's very possible. I don't see Micah Parsons falling to 15. You could go D-line, possibly, but I'm gonna say we did the draft yesterday. We went with Justin Fields. If that were to present itself, if you were to drop that far down, I'm gonna say Trey Lance. I think they go with Trey Lance in the draft. He's still a very young prospect, and he could definitely use some experience sitting behind Cam Newton for a year. Cam Newton is not being paid a lot this year. He's only getting about $7 million base salary, and then I think the rest is incentive base, which could be up to 14.
Yeah, definitely.
Learn the system. I think it'd be a perfect situation for him. I mean, offensively, that's the best route. That's the best route. You got to get a quarterback for the foreseeable future, because if Cam doesn't work out, then you're just now you're lost again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll definitely see how the Patriots will approach that 15th overall pick. They got a lot of options they could go with. Let's move on to the biggest free agency move, and I want you guys to narrow it down just to one move, one big free agency move that you believe was the biggest impact in the NFL season. I'll start off first by saying I believe it's Corey Linsley to the Chargers. The reason why I believe it's Corey Linsley to the Chargers is they need to get offensive line help for Herbert. I believe that's going to be a move that will help signify the Chargers on building a team that could potentially compete with the Chiefs in the division. I'll then move to you, CJ. Which move do you believe was the biggest move in the offseason?
I mean, can I say Tampa Bay in general, just for them just getting everybody back? Like, I mean, I think they just brought everybody back. I mean, they had the parade and they were like, Bruce Arians was lit talking about, you're coming back. You're coming back. We're bringing you back. And they did. And it's crazy. You rarely see that. Usually when you're Super Bowl winning team, they always lose one or two key guys during that run. And they brought all of those guys back. Shaq Barrett, that obviously being at the top, being that elite edge rusher, getting to the quarterback. He's had a special season since he's got that opportunity to be the guy in Tampa Bay. And for them being able to keep re-sign him, Levante David, a leader, one of the most underrated defensive players in the NFL, keeping those two guys, Gronk is obviously going to stay as long as Brady asks him to, or as long as he feels like he wants to keep playing football. So that was never going to be an issue. So I think just Tampa Bay being able to keep all those guys and bring them all back, I think it's the biggest move in free agency. You could go New England with the dual tight ends, but I think for the champs to continue to stay with that core, it's going to be tough to stop them going into next season.
It definitely is. And then I'll throw it out to you, Caleb. One big free agency move in the NFL, what do you believe that big move was?
I think Kansas City with Joe Thuney from New England stealing him. I think that was a great, 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 great move. I think that was the only weakness in Kansas City was offense. The teams could really exploit and point out. So I think with them picking him up, that was a good pick for their offense. They did end up losing Sammy Watkins, but that's good for Mecole Hardman. That means he'll be able to step up, get more touches and opportunities. But I think that move makes Kansas City a lot better.
Joe Thuney. Yeah, it definitely is. There are a lot of big moves made in the NFL offseason. Those are just some of the few that we highlighted. And one last thing to close out episode 51 of the MCS Real Sports Podcast. CJ, we appreciate you coming on. Let's close it out with some NBA discussions. One of those things that I want to discuss before we get into the current NBA standings, there was a video that Caleb sent to me on First Take where they made a top 10 list of NBA players under the age of 25. And the list came out as this. It had Luka Doncic 1, Zion 2, LaMelo Ball 3, Donovan Mitchell 4, Tatum 5, De'Aaron Fox 6, Ben Simmons 7, Devin Booker 8, Bam Adebayo 9, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at number 10. CJ, what are your thoughts on that top 10 list? How ridiculous do you think that is?
So Booker should obviously be top three without question. I mean, Zion, Luka and Zion, personally, I would put Zion one, just because he's 20 and he's already putting up 35, 37. Just imagine when he gets to Booker's age, which is 24, the type of numbers he's going to be putting up. It's crazy. We're all without a jump shot, by the way. So his upside is crazy. His upside is through the roof. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA to watch. I like Luka. He's an excellent player. I think both of those guys can improve on defense for sure. But I think Booker, I understand LaMelo. We've seen it, you know, 19, putting the Hornets on the map. But I think you have to drop him down just a little bit and put Booker there. When Booker was 21, 20 years old, he scored 70 in a game. So it's like, you gotta. So now we see him with structure, with a good team around him. I didn't expect the Suns to be playing like this at all. You know, they have one of the best. They could potentially be the one seed in the West. Nobody thought that. Nobody thought that started coming into the season. Everybody thought, you know, they'd be maybe 5-6, you know, have a maybe first round. But now they're right there and potentially having a number one record. They just beat the Jazz last night. Booker's a key. We have to get 37. Like, he's a problem. Now he has a solid team around him. You got to put him there. To have Fox over him, I think it's just a little too premature. I would go Zion, Luka, Booker, Tatum, and then the round out to top five. I'd probably say Mitchell, and then LaMelo. I put LaMelo at six, and then the rest from 7 to 10 is fine. But I think they had Booker at 8 or something like that.
Yeah, they had Booker at 8.
Yeah. That was the only one. I know Stephen A. was like, you know, people like ESPN need to get drug tested and all that, but. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's, I understand they're looking at LaMelo's upside, which I get, and that's why I think those three guys are at the top three, because they're so young and they already have such an impact on the league. I get it, but for what Booker is doing right now, and Donovan as well, you know, with the Jazz, a lot of people thought the Jazz they were done, you know, it was over for them, mm-hmm. and you know they've messed around and have a really good season as well. So that would be my top five. So a mixture of the young guys with upside and then the guys that are still young and still making an impact today.
Yeah, that's definitely a good list. I'll throw it out to Caleb. You went to me when you sent this video and you said you had a lot to say about it. The floor is yours. What do you have to say about this list?
Lyle, hey, CJ made a really good point, because they are looking into the future. So that's what one thing I want to say is, that's why I understand why Zion and LaMelo are at 2, you feel me? Because they are looking into the future, and I think by like 2-3 more years, like Zion and LaMelo are gonna be damn near probably at 1 and 2, a couple more years. So I understand where they're coming from, but as of today, right now, an impact on the game right now, I didn't think it was right. I think you have to throw Mitchell in there. He's had an amazing season. You see how he responded to Shaq. Ever since that happened, he's been fucking balling. The game last night, that was a great matchup between Booker and Mitchell. So I think those guys deserve to be right there. I don't disagree with Luka being at number one, because I do think he deserves that. I mean, his team is not the best team. He doesn't have the best team around him, and they're not winning as much, but he makes everybody better, and he fucking puts up MVP numbers, and it's only his, what, like third year. So I mean, yeah, I'm not mad at Luka being number one. I think Mitchell should be a little bit higher. I think Booker should be a little bit higher due to the fact that they're more consistent and their teams are winning more. Now, when we talk about Tatum, I wasn't mad where he was at, neither at number four. I thought he was solid there. I think he could probably go a little higher if the Celtics start winning more. Where was Embiid on that list?
There wasn't Embiid on the list. There was,
he's over 25.
Adebayo. Adebayo was at number 9.
Okay, yeah, and I think Adebayo could move up some more. And I wasn't mad where Ben Simmons was at neither. Like, Ben Simmons, he's having a solid year this year. Once he scores more and consistently, I think he could climb up Dallas as well. But right now, I think those are the guys that are having impacts right now. You go from Luka to Mitchell to Booker, Tatum, and Simmons. And then we talk about Zion and LaMelo. But I understand why Zion and LaMelo are too. Like, they are the guys.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you guys as well. I think it's one of those where you got to – the guys that are making an impact now, you got to have them higher on the list. The guys that don't have an impact, you got to have them lower. So I believe Devin Booker should be in top five, and Adebayo should be near, maybe like seven or six. But other than that, that's pretty much it. I didn't like the list. I feel like they could have done better, but I understand the kind of potential that they see out of it. And to close out this episode, as you guys know, Cabe and I both like the Lakers, and our special guest CJ is a diehard Knicks fan. I'll start off with our special guest, and CJ, your Knicks are the 8th seed. Do they make the playoffs?
Oh man. I'll be optimistic. I'll say yes. These final 20 games are going to be extremely tough. We've already seen the schedule after the All-Star break has been pretty tough. The Knicks just can't find a way to close. Lost to the Celtics last night in a close game. The Miami game was close, lost there. Both Philadelphia games were close, couldn't get the W. Brooklyn on Monday. So, I mean, if they can't close out these games that you're supposed to close, I don't see it. You know, they could get in the play-in, you know, but when the game gets tight, what's going to happen? So, I mean, I hope so. You know, that'd definitely be a good start to restarting this franchise, you know, bringing in Leon Rose, bringing in William Wesley, Worldwide West, bringing in Tom Thibodeau as the head coach now, having Randle be an all-star. It's definitely a catalyst for something great. But, you know, they have to be able to close out these close games, man. I mean, they've had multiple opportunities to put themselves in a good spot to be in that 4-5 range, get you know, 4 or 5 games over 500. But it just to me, they don't have enough talent. They don't have enough talent on the team. RJ's promising, you know, young player. I know he's not on that list, but I think, you know, he's probably somewhere 11 or 12 or something on that top 10 list for sure. He has to continue to prove himself. And Julius had a great year after last year where he struggled a little bit. So I think maybe one or two pieces away, and next year in the free agency, they could potentially make a move and maybe contend in the Eastern Conference. But as of right now, I think I'll say yes, but they still have a lot of work to improve on. They still have a lot of stuff they need to improve on for sure.
Yeah, we'll definitely see what the Knicks can do. And my great Lakers fan, Caleb, should we be worried, or is it just wait till we get healthy and then we'll run it?
Hey, we just wait till we get healthy. We'll be solid. Wait till we get healthy. I think I'm honestly proud of our guys that are stepping up. You know, we're out without LeBron, without AD, and without Drummond, and we're stepping up and pulling out some hard-fought games. So, yeah, I'm proud of our guys because these games that we got to play, none of these games are like easy W's, especially this month. So we just got to keep fighting hard, playing hard, and trying to pull out dubs that we can win. We're going to have a tough schedule. Once we get healthy, we got to make sure we don't fall in the play-in tournament seat. So 7-10. If we as long as we 6 and under, we good. But once we get in 7, 8, 9, now we're starting to panic.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. Once we get healthy, we'll probably be a top 3 seed and we'll be one of the best teams in the Western Conference. And with that being said, that will conclude episode 51 of the MCS Real Sports Podcast. CJ, since you're our special guest, where can the people that listen to this episode find all the great things that you do?
You can find me at anywhere on the Unwrapped Sports Network. All their platforms, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. My guy Anthony Conover, Connie, we stream every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, called The Hard Count, covering everything at NFL. Our previous episode, our most recent episode, we just had You just had Masker on, your guys' host, just talking about some NFL and covering the game. It was a great time to have him on. Definitely looking forward to having him on in the future, and also having Caleb on too in the near future as well, covering us some football. And you can find me for NBA. You can find me at the Guard Up Pod on IG, covering all things NBA. And just talking about the association, man. It's a wild ride. I think the second half is going to be special. And the Western Conference is stacked. I think it's probably going to be one of the best Western Conference playoffs that we've seen in a long time. And I'm looking forward to talking about that and breaking that down with you and Matt very soon. So having you on my podcast as well, man. Thank you guys for having me today.
Man, anytime, man. I can't wait to be on there, man.
Facts.
Yeah, and my great co-host, Caleb, where can they find the great work that you do?
You can find me on Instagram at @OneCalebConnett. Click the link in the bio. You can find other great things there, too. You can find me on Twitter at @CalebConnett2. Click the link in the bio, and you can find other great things there, too. Jules and Jim Podcast every Thursday. You feel me? MCS Real Sports Podcast. We drop it when we drop. You feel me? CJ, we there. We're going to chop all this basketball up. And, hey, everybody listening, have a blessed day.
Yeah, definitely. You can check out my stuff at @Matt_Skura on Twitter, Instagram @Matt_Skura20. And like Caleb mentioned, you can check out MCS Real Sports Podcasts everywhere, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, you name it. We're available everywhere. Once again, CJ, a pleasure having you on as a special guest. This has been episode 51 of the MCS Real Sports Podcast. We are out of here.